Hello, 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 and welcome to the Q4 2007 Osonix.com quarterly report. Talking to you from the lounge of the... No, I'm not talking to you from a lounge. I'm talking to you from an apartment. That was a scene from Stranger Than Fiction, a film I was just watching. And I got to the scene, the sort of nice, sweet scene where Harold is in a woman's apartment and playing the one song in the world that he knows. The inspiration struck to do my quarterly report. So what's been going on this past quarter? Well, you know, lots of stuff, some of it germane, some of it not germane. So I'll just go into a little bit of a free-spirited stream of consciousness here. Let's see. I saw Neil Young perform on his most recent tour. He's his last tour, this current tour in support of Chrome Dreams 2 is really interesting. He has chosen all vintage theaters, theaters that are off the main circuit, as it were. This is a guy who's, you know, played Madison Square Garden in New York City, but he chose the United Palace Theater. Now, as a native of New York, let me assure you, I'd never heard of the United Palace Theater. It's on 178th and Broadway, I believe. Maybe it's 175th. Turns out this is a theater that was built in the... it looked like a variation on Radio City Music Hall. And I haven't researched it, but I'm going to guess it was built in the 40s or the 50s. And apparently it was purchased at some point by a church group up in Harlem, and they've kept it and maintained it and hasn't been used too much as a theater. But Neil Young, you know, staged his tour. He specified in his hunt for venues that he didn't want to play any place where any outdoor lighting could get in, and also he wanted theaters where there were no digital lighting switchboards. He wanted to absolutely, to the very smallest nuance, recreate what a rock show would have been like in the 60s, which is to say, in the 60s, folks would have been playing in theaters that had been built in the 40s and the 50s. And it would have been before a lot of the more modern accoutrements were in place. Anyway, it was an absolutely amazing show. Great for Neil Young fans. He did the first set. It was acoustic. And then they closed it out with an electric set. Just him, Ben Keith, Rick Rosas, Ralph Molina was on drums. His wife was singing backup vocals. There was another sort of a new addition to the band, a younger guy. I don't know his name. He was playing the occasional keys and doing backup vocals as well. And I discovered in the midst of this performance that a couple of things. First of all, Chrome Dreams, which is a decent enough album for Neil Young fans, underrepresents some of the songs when you see them live. I mean, they're really amazing. There's a song in particular called No Hidden Path. And if anybody asks me if I have an answer to, sort of a parlor question, party question, what's the greatest love song? Hey, dude. Excuse me. Let me get into more of a character voice. Hey, dude, what's the greatest love song ever written? I'm going to say No Hidden Path by Neil Young. It just so happens it's 14 minutes long, and it's one of those crazy rockers. But it's very sort of not as immediately familiar as something like Cortez the Killer, for example. But wow, seeing him do it live is pretty amazing. And it was a great show. I love that song. It takes on an added poignance when you see a 62-year-old man who has already suffered a brain aneurysm singing this song about love with his wife singing backup vocals. And the main refrain is just, when I'm with you, I feel no hidden path. And it's got one of those great, cheesy, sort of hippy-dippy 1960s, almost Crosby, Stills, and Nashy kind of vocal harmony sections. And then he goes into his own psychedelic space, which he did. And it was a wonder to behold. I've been trying to explain to people who aren't Neil Young fans that, as with Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods, you don't get to be that famous internationally without being a marvel to behold, regardless of whether or not you're into sports. Neil Young, when he gets cranking on electric, it's just an amazing thing. When he got done, he was sort of, you know, stalking around the stage like a boxer meets a panther, playing this song. And when he got done with it, he was still on a sort of an adrenaline high. And it's an amazing thing to see a 62-year-old man with more energy and verve than most 17-year-olds. And, you know, you had an audience of people, some of whom were young and some of them had been there from, you know, fans of his from the 60s. And given the ticket prices, the only people who could afford to go to this thing were people who were, you know, making adult money. But somebody up in the balcony yelled something, and it was, you know, there were some drugs in the 60s. So somebody yelled something that was a little bit peculiar, almost sort of had vague religious overtones. And it was great. Neil Young just immediately just bounced up to the microphone while people were standing and applauding after this guy yelled something. And he just said in his old cranky voice, "Sit your ass back down in your seat, white boy. Shut him up." It was great stuff. I remember reading an article somewhere about how, Neil Young, it was a New Yorker article, just an observer who had seen, Neil Young coming out of a restaurant, a trendy restaurant in Hollywood, and Jack Nicholson going in, and that, you know, a crowd just sort of gathered and watched the two of them as they sort of circled each other. You know, these two iconoclastic figures. And people were waiting to see sort of, you know, who had the most mojo, or at least this is what the writer said. And this was back when I was a kid, before I really cared about music or Neil Young. I just remembered the article, and I guess it was something that sort of stuck in my mind. Oh, maybe someday I'll check out Neil Young. But at any rate, this person said that it was a no contest win, that, you know, Jack Nicholson was, you know, going to ask Neil Young for his autograph, and Neil Young couldn't be bothered and just walked away. I mentioned that because, you know, some people are huge Neil Young fans and some people don't get it. But, you know, he's not just a folky. He's a little bit crotchety. And he told a great story from the stage during his acoustic set, in this wonderful ornate theater with, you know, gold gilt arched vaulted ceiling and staircases that spiraled up to the balconies. Just this marvel of an old theater that none of us in New York really know exists. And it's still there miraculously. And Neil told his story, and it made me think that there was really sort of a political overtone to his choice of theaters, trying to get his audience out for a night away from a homogenized world of Starbucks coffee shops. He just sort of sitting there at the stage, this guy is gruffer and rougher than Jack Nicholson. With his acoustic guitar, he just paused and, man, a few words, he just sat there and he just said, "Donald Trump, sort of a fan. Comes to a lot of my shows. It's okay as an individual, I guess. But the people who did all this," looks carefully around the theater. We all look around the theater, following his gaze and take in the marvel of it. "I wonder what happened to the people who did all this." It's a good thing seeing Neil Young live. Alrighty, so I've written some gloomy, doomy things about the fortunes of music. For me and this site, and there's something to that, but I don't know. I was out at a bar the other night. Close followers of the site know that in one of the previous quarterly reports, I wrote a song. I didn't write a song. I'm sorry, that was very wrong of me to say. I was fortunate enough to be present for the arrival of a song while I was improvising with two wonderful musicians, Ben Moran and Liam Wood. And that song, which I was singing the words to, and they arrived out of nowhere, that song wound up being called, with the benefit of hindsight, The Ballad of John Pounds. And John Pounds is this guy, you don't need to know my name, but, you know, I've already given his away, so what the hey. John Pounds is a guy I went to college with, and he surfaced recently. I was hanging out with some friends of mine a few days ago, and John called me out of the blue, and he's gotten himself a job. He's working nights after having lost his previous job because he was having real problems with a lot of contraband substances. And, you know, we went out drinking, which isn't a good thing because he's got a real problem drinking. And we drank till about 3 a.m. And then I decided I was going to head home. And John decided he was going to keep drinking. And there's a certain poetry to it all. He's a really bright guy. He was a philosophy major. I was for a few years in college. And we're having this really great sort of stranger than fiction-esque kind of conversation about life, its nature, and so on. And he's talking about his own proclivity to just try to create a timelessness for himself in the moment of inebriation. And I was telling him that the thing that had worked for me, or the thing that had helped me, you know, not lose jobs or, you know, be sort of stable, was being so passionate about music that it forced me to make plans. And so I work in an office, but I work in an office so that I can afford to have a place where I can live by myself, where no roommate is going to tell me to stop playing music in the middle of the night if the inspiration so strikes me, and a place where I can afford to keep all my gear and also have money for the gear. And so music, you know, the output of it may or may not be that important. And sometimes I've felt guilty about some of the choices that I've made, putting so much energy into music. But then, you know, I run into people who, you know, as time goes on, to borrow from the Neil Young ethos or legend, you know, we can all go a little Danny Whitten. Danny Whitten was a guitar player who overdosed and was the inspiration, the macabre inspiration, the dark inspiration for Tonight's the Night, and a song of Neil Young and an album of his as well. You know, it, I guess, you know, music is this thing, just as Harold Crick in the film Stranger Than Fiction decides that he wants to get in touch with himself and play guitar. Music is this thing that, for better or for worse, gives me some kind of ballast and some kind of structure. So, you know, it's got a role to play in my life, though I don't know if it is my life, and I think it can be tricky when it crowds other things out. You know, you want to play songs to get the girl, not to, there's a great Pearl Jam song at the end of Binaural, Day You'll Soon Forget. And one of the lyrics is, pity the fool, or I'm not getting the lyric right, but sorry is the fool who wants to buy a Corvette, thinks he'll get the girl, he'll only get the mechanic. Something like that, you know, and you look at a Sam Ash catalog or a musician's friend online website, and you see what a fetish music and, you know, sort of, you know, how is it that so many people could think they're going to be rock stars? It's beyond me. But I do think there's something to be said for an artist just sort of contemplating and commenting upon the world in which he or she finds himself or herself. So maybe there's something to be said for these quarterly reports. But at any rate, to sum up, so music. You know, I have been dilly-dallying over the course of the past year. I made some hardware changes and some software changes, which is part of the reason there's been so little output. And then I got very involved in playing with Ben Moran and Liam Wood, and that looked very promising for a while, but then Liam has chosen to move upstate, and, you know, things get awkward when everybody wants to be Jimmy Page or Jimi Hendrix, or, you know, everybody wants to be the front man. It's the curse of bands in this day and age. Everybody's a genius, so nothing gets done. But at any rate, I've also done quite a bit of stuff during that period. I've got some sketches that I was working on at home. And since it doesn't look like I'm going to get the girl, I'll probably return to working with some of those things in the near future. You know, the new Mac Pros just came out. I'm probably going to get one with that that office making money I've got. So things may look up for maybe by the next quarterly report, or certainly I would say sometime this year there will be some more musical output, barring my walking in front of a bus to save a child, despite knowing how that story would end. That's a reference to Stranger Than Fiction, the film, which was on at the beginning of this quarterly report. By way of quarterly report updates, I still have a just wonderful, clever idea that I've been talking about and promising for a couple of quarterly reports now, which will be, you know, in the funny zone. And I'm still hoping just for a little bit of assistance from both the Meat Lisak and PG6. I've gotten that assistance from PG6, and I'm waiting for Amit, who's just relocated out to California, from Germany to New York to California. The man is not only a better and more creative musician than I am, but he lives a much more interesting life. So a moment of applause for Amit. And then hopefully as he gets his life together out in San Francisco, he'll be able to provide me with the modest collaboration that I seek for my clever quarterly report, which will hopefully be pending. So for this quarterly report, what have we here? Well, I'm going to put up, I guess now I'm just arbitrarily deciding since I'm talking about it, I might as well put up the John Pound song. Again, although it was featured in another quarterly report, and to make it worth your while for sticking around rather than just posting something that's already been up before, I'm going to post a couple of leftover bits, jams from the time that I was playing with Ben and Liam. I think the only things I'm going to put up are things from a day when Liam didn't show up. There are other things that I might still actually polish off that might appear in whatever I produce. That thing I was saying I'll eventually get around to doing before the end of the year might include some of the music that I made with Ben and Liam, or it might there might be a sustained, like the equivalent of an album, just of stuff I did with Ben and Liam, or it may not hold up or be strong enough. I really don't know, but these are two things that I feel like I can let go now because they're, again, in keeping with the notion that the quarterly reports are great places to put out sort of, you know, what would be the equivalent of B-sides if we lived in an era where B-sides were applicable. But, you know, they're just sort of extra things that, you know, that I don't mind letting go now without putting the sort of torturous amount of overthink that artists put into things before they decide whether or not they're done. These are just fun little snippets. One is called, I guess I'm going to call it Family Values or something along those lines. It's 2.5 minutes long, and it's just fun, kind of funny. Just happened. I'm playing bass. Ben is playing drums. And then there's another thing called Record Back, or Read the Record Back. And we've got these hours and hours worth of jams and so forth. And Ben made a point of emailing me and saying that he liked this. And, you know, it's okay. I'm not necessarily as big a fan of it, but it's always interesting. You know, it's always interesting to get feedback from people outside of yourself, especially when you're doing art. And it's interesting to me that, you know, that this is something that another pair of ears and another mind, like, actually took the time to say, hey, this is good. So hopefully you'll agree. And if you don't, hey, you know, that's okay too. It's there. So I'm putting up those two jams, plus the old thing that was already posted in a previous quarterly report. And I'm posting a draft of this quarterly report that I recorded a few weeks ago when I had some time off, and was perhaps more lucid and less coherent than I hope I'm being now. So there you go. A lot of audio pickings for you for this quarterly report. No visual aids, but again, hopefully with the assistance of PG6 and Amit, I'll have some wonderful, witty stuff for you down the road. I hope that you had an absolutely extraordinary and wonderful holiday season. And if you did, I hope that you can hang on and look forward to a truly transformative springtime. It's just a few more months to go. So thank you so much for listening. As always, take care, all the best. And until we meet again, thank you for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.